This is Lori Prox of KVAK Radio here with Kathy Todd, one of our doctors here. And Valdez, you are one of the owners and doctors at the Valdez Medical Clinic, as well as a emergency on-call doctor. You've been here, how many years, Kathy?
I've been here since 1980, so
you
40
have,
years.
Do you even keep count of how many kids you've delivered?
No, I haven't. I haven't kept track.
Yeah, I don't do that kind of stuff either, but I haven't ever helped anyone give birth. That would be way more monumentous than anything I've ever done. I just count like frosty fever buttons or something, but it's hundreds and hundreds.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. And someone should look into that. Okay. That's a goal for after we get out of this COVID-19. But I did want to have you come in and chat with the community and kind of put a face on local medicine here in Valdez. I guess my first question is, how are you doing? I know the hospitals and clinic, you guys have been preparing for COVID-19. So how are you doing, and how are preparations going? How are you feeling about that?
I think that Valdez got out in front of the curve really quickly. Dr. Shirk, in particular, came back from a swim trip to Oregon and had not COVID symptoms, we thought at the time, but through trying to be very, very careful, he wasn't allowed to see patients for the first 2 weeks. And Dr. Cullen got back from one of his trips as the president of the or chairman of the board now of the American Academy of Family Practice, the last trip that they did before they canceled everything. And so he wasn't allowed. And so there was lots of meetings, and those physicians held those forts, which was a lot of time. And we were very lucky that Valdez has been going through this horrible thing to fix all the pipes in the hospital, that pipes get pinhole leaks, and then you find out when you go to fix the pinhole leaks and put a plastic pipe in instead of copper, that there's mold in the walls, and so you have to abate the mold. And so they kept finding more and more mold.
And this was started before all COVID-19.
This has been going on all winter, and so they were finally getting that done. And so they had all of this negative pressure stuff, because when you're fixing that and using your hospital, you have to have negative pressure to pull out all the mold while they're working on that. And so here we have all these people in town and all of the stuff that they're taking out because they don't need it for the mold anymore. And they made a third of our hospital into negative pressure.
So I've seen the video of how that works, but I don't know how this is going to work on the radio. But if you could kind of explain, when someone does come to the hospital for either COVID-19 symptoms or just a broken arm, what will they experience when they go to Providence Hospital here in Valdez?
Well, we actually are using two separate entrances. The front entrance, if you haven't been out of town and you haven't been exposed to somebody who's been out of town and you don't have a cough yourself and all those things, you come in the main entrance of the hospital from the south, and you get screened by somebody who asks you all those questions that I just did. And those people come in and get their lab done or get their x-ray done or go to the ER for their broken leg. If instead you say, I've got this horrible cough, or I just got back from Seattle, but I don't have a cough, but I've got a broken leg, then you go in the ER entrance of the hospital, the north entrance toward the hills, and we will probably take most of your history while you called us on the phone the first time. We will talk to you by a phone. Or if you're in your car, we will say, why don't you stay in your car until we're ready for you? And then we will let you in the ER door and take you to a room right away on the possibly COVID side of the hospital. Now, we have no patients in Valdez with COVID at the moment, but that's where people would be if they were being treated for COVID-19. And then there's some rooms that are separate and all filtered and all negative pressured and whatever. If you're one of these people who went to Fairbanks for the weekend, so you've been within 100 feet or 100
not miles,
feet, 100 miles of a case. So you could be somebody who's an asymptomatic carrier. So you're going to be in there, and the nurse and the doctor taking care of you are going to have on all this regalia. It looks like spacesuits, just to be careful. And why are they using the spacesuits instead of a special mask? Because you can reuse the spacesuits. You can clean them. So we're trying to not use up the stuff that is that has to be sterilized out of town or has to be thrown away. We're trying to save that.
At this point, I wouldn't imagine you have so many cases that you're in a hurry. You've got a little more time between
cases. That's
right.
That's right. So you could end up with, the only thing is that your granddaughter came to visit from Seattle, you would still be in that part of the hospital. Just because we're being very, very careful. You'll find everybody in the hospital wearing a mask for the same reason that the community is wearing a mask, which is that if they themselves had it, if the employee of the hospital or the doctor had it, then we don't want to cough it on somebody who is already sick, or speak it on somebody who's already sick, or breathe it on somebody who's already sick. So we're keeping our droplets off of you. And the nurses who are actually taking care of patients right up close and personal are wearing an actual mask that's a little bit better than a cloth mask, because they can't get sick. They just can't get sick. We don't have any extras.
And I do want to ask about that, because I know you watch the news and, you know, it looks like a war zone in New York City and some of those hospitals, and people are very concerned for the healthcare workers. What's the status of our healthcare workers here in Valdez? You know, if you see them at the grocery store, I mean, you mentioned there's a little bit different probability and different circumstances here in Valdez than other areas.
Yeah, Valdez has been working on the idea that we're going for zero cases at the moment. Are we just postponing the inevitable? We will see when fishing season arrives. But we have to flatten our curve here a lot, because although we have respirators and we have oxygen tubing and whatever, and we've ordered extra oxygen tanks, we're really very, very well prepared. Still, we're a very small town, and so if 20% of the people who get sick with this, it's probably less than that, but 20% of the people who get sick with this need to have oxygen, then we're going to have to be very careful that we don't have too many people. If it's 20% of 3,000 people all at once, we can't do it. Whereas if we have 20 people at a time, we can do it. If we have 6 people at a time, no sweat. And so that's what we're trying to do in Valdez, is keep it very, very low. And so far we've succeeded, and that's really important. So the nursing personnel at the moment is just a matter of having enough of them. We're already pretty low on them. You can't just get somebody from an agency at the moment, because they've all been snapped up by the places that are going crazy. Big Prov has been very nice. Anchorage Province has sent us 3 nurses for travelers, because they're underemployed and doing elective surgery. And so we've got a surgical nurse and 2 kind of intensive care unit sort of nurses that usually work in the post-surgery unit, who are here as travelers.
This has gone for a while, and I think initially people were just doing everything they could and as fast as they could. And I think there was I think exhausted was a word used. And are things slowing down? Because, you know, I think the initial rush to prepare, and then it seems like maybe without having cases here, it's given us the luxury of maybe getting a breath, right?
Yeah, I think that's perhaps it's not a good thing, because how long can you hold your breath?
Yeah.
People are going to say, nothing's happening, why should I do this? That's one of the problems, I suppose. But no, we've had time to practice. We've had time to set up all this stuff, and just happen to have these people in town that could make our hospital into this negative pressure thing. That's amazing.
I didn't know that. That's awesome to know. Yeah.
Yeah. We could try out our techniques, and you know, I remember one time I was there, nurses changed the shift, so I was hearing what the new technique was for what was going to be the flow for, you know, seeing people who had coughs and whatever. And they proudly said, oh, you know, here's a flow. And the people on nights said, you can't see people in the parking lot when it's dark. And the day people said, oh, we forgot to think of that. You know, yeah. So when you're trying to prepare, it's really nice to be able to do that.
We talked about this a little bit before we went on air. The character of people comes out, and it's not that important, but I know my back end of my website, like the back of my hand now, I can do so many more technical things, and the innovation that comes out of this situation. And I think you've seen people rise to the occasion, I believe, from what I've seen through different videos and stuff posted by the hospital.
Yeah, people are really being very forgiving of, you know, we know you're trying to do this really carefully, and I've got all the time in the world because I'm home from work anyway. You know, we have called the police on one person who was trying to do everything wrong and wasn't going to go along with the plan. But most people, they're really, really being very nice. And it's nice that a lot of people are very happy that we are able, all the doctors in town are able to do visits over the internet, and or it's better for us and it's better for a lot of the patients to just not have people in the building, not sitting in the waiting room. We can do, it's amazing how much you can do once you can see people. It's not just a phone call. It's a, you know, it hurts right here, doctor, or you take a picture and, oh, that bump. Oh, okay, I can tell. Or
rashes, see how big it is, you know, over the
how
screen,
big it is,
right?
And oh, push on it and tell me what happens when you do this. And you really can do quite a bit that way. And so that means that only the people who have to have, that really have to have a lab test or have to have an x-ray are in the hospital. And
we did mention zero cases so far here in Valdez.
So far.
But you have done some testing. So can you tell us how that's gone?
Yeah.
And what the process is, maybe?
Yeah, well, we don't have an unlimited number of tests at all. Other countries have done that, but this country is still, what we're doing is looking for positives, not looking for negatives. If you do the test too soon, you may get a false negative. You say, oh, I don't have COVID. My cough is something else. And actually, if we tested 2 days later, you would have been positive. So we're not.
So is that why we're asking people to wait sometimes till there's a little bit before the testing?
Well, yes and no. We're asking people to wait for all kinds of reasons. So, but anyway, we have tests at the moment that people who we think might have the virus and therefore might be the people who could be getting worse in, you know, 5 days later, could end up in the hospital, that kind of thing. Those are the people that we're testing, partially for epidemiology and partially for the patient. But we have on the order of like 50 of those tests total. And we've only done maybe 30 tests in Valdez.
And you have 50 left or had 50, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, that kind of numbers, it changes depending on various things. The hospital just got a machine that will be able to do testing on site. But don't everybody get your hopes up too much, because we don't have any stuff to go in it yet. And so whether they'll have...
So is that part of what the governor was talking about? Different communities were receiving...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to check with them whether we were a community and they weren't sure on that.
Yeah. So testing is coming, but the state of the art, even if we had all the tests in the world, is not such that you can say this person cannot possibly have it. It's a more of a matter of probability. And that helps on a population level, but it doesn't help on an individual level to say this person for sure can go back to work because we know that they're negative. The test just is never going to be 100%.
And I know you've posted this other places, but if somebody feels like they have symptoms, I feel like maybe we should run through what are the symptoms and at what point should you seek medical assistance?
Yeah. Well, so there's all kinds of symptoms. We're finding out that people have rashes. I mean, you know, but not just a rash. And likewise, GI symptoms go with it sometimes, but hardly ever does somebody have just that, just diarrhea. That's probably not it. So we're still going on the same probable symptoms, which is something that looks kind of like the flu. You feel like you're tired and worn out. Temperature, you know, not just 99.6. A lot of people run that in the afternoon anyway. But temperature over 101, you know, and feeling short of breath, feeling... and having a cough. Those are still the major things to look at. And I was saying before, 20% of the people need medical attention. So, you know, people die of the flu every year, but most people get the flu and they stay home and they drink chicken soup and they feel, you know, they feel cruddy and then they get better. And 80% of the people that get this virus symptomatically at all will be like that. And they could just stay home. And we'd like all those people to stay home because otherwise there's more chance if they go out and sit in a waiting room or whatever that they're going to give it to somebody else and or overwhelm the system. Whereas that 20% of the people might need oxygen. And about a quarter of those people may need to be intubated or, you know, intensive care unit sort of thing. And I've just been told yesterday that both of the hospitals, the big hospitals in Anchorage, I'm sorry, I don't know about ANMC, are half empty. They've emptied out everything so that the idea would be that we would send the really, really sick people.
I was going
to
ask
Anchorage.
You about that.
Yeah.
So the medevac is still, I think I heard one the other day. So
I hope they buy a bunch of planes from Raven though, because I don't think we have enough medevacs to do that. That may be the choke point, but and Valdez's weather. So we would be prepared here to keep people for a while we were waiting to send them. Because a lot of these people have to be on a respirator for like 10 days. And we're going to run out of nurses before we run out of anything else. We have six things that could be used as respirators, four real respirators in town. And the people to run them is going to be the problem. So we were really thinking of ourselves as being the temporary, and then people could go into intensive care unit stuff in Anchorage in the long run.
And what are you finding right now that Valdez is most concerned about? I know you mentioned you're getting some calls. Yeah.
I kind of didn't finish that question though. Yeah. You asked what should people do? So the reason we're interviewing people on the phone mm-hmm. and finding out that they might stay home is because 80% of the people can stay home, and they don't need the expense of being in the hospital. We don't need to use up a bed on them in the hospital, but we do want to check up on those people. So we might issue them a pulse ox where you can measure your oxygen saturation in your blood. And if that starts going down, like you're getting worse, how much worse is worse? You know, you always get worse with the flu before you get better, but how much worse is worse? When do you need to be one of those 20% that needs the oxygen or the hospital otherwise? We want to monitor those people. So if we send off a test on you because we think that you sound like a live one, and if we send off a test on you, we still won't get the results back for at least 3 days, if not 5, 6, or 7 days. And so we're going to treat you as if you had it in the meantime. So we can treat a lot of people as if they have it without the test.
And that's going well over the phone. You've got capacity in your handling.
We've got folks who've called in. Yes, we've got capacity to do that, and we've got more capacity being determined every day. That is, we've got the local stuff, and then we also have been given some stuff from the big Providence system that will, by computer, ask you, what's your temperature at the moment? What is your oxygen saturation? And we'll trend you. And if there's something weird, we'll call us and say, hey, you know, that person who's staying at home out at South Central, you should check in on them, because you should probably have them come in.
And we're always looking at the silver lining, but we mentioned you've delivered half of Valdez. So it's kind of nice, you know, as opposed to being in New York City and you don't have a relationship with those doctors. Many of the folks here are your regular patients and you have a relationship with them. So that must make the phone calls easier and the virtual visits a little more personal than...
Absolutely. I know people are being told, oh, well, do telemedicine because telemedicine with who knows who, because your doctors are too busy. None of the doctors in town are too busy right at the moment. That could change. But we would love to see you. And we kind of know a little bit, oh, well, that sounds like your usual asthma. Oh, what do you think? Is it different than what you are this time of the year always? Should we give you more allergy medicine because the pollen's out?
You can't say anything due to HIPAA, but you are aware of some of the folks who are a little more compromised. And how do they treat this differently? People who might have more, have diabetes or have...
Well, you have to be more careful if you have one of those other conditions. But the other thing I know is who's a minimizer and who's a maximizer. Who's going to complain about every little thing? And I can take that into account. Whereas the person who never calls for anything until they're at death's door, who calls and says, well, I've got this little cough. You go, wait a minute. How little is this cough? Well, I actually couldn't sleep all last night and I can't breathe and I can't get up out of my chair because I'm too short of breath. I need to ask that extra question because I know that person never says anything until they're really bad off. So
yeah, definitely. I'm from California, so it's a little different. I'm in touch with my family. It's a very different environment with in a just a big lot of people. So as opposed to less people here. So I did want to get to that as well. I know a lot of people worrying about what kind of mask to wear and where do I wear it? And they're really looking to other people to give them exact advice. But everybody's situation is unique and it is important to get outside. I think the governor said that. So do you have any advice in that vein of, exercise and mental health, being outside, those things are weigh in at some point, right?
Yeah. The masks only stop droplets, and everybody's been worried from the beginning that this has a lot of aerosol besides droplets. It only has aerosol, when you're doing certain things, but those things include singing and, talking loudly, like as a graduation speech or whatever. And so you really don't want to be in confined spaces, even if everybody has a mask on. But we are lucky enough that you can go walk to the post office. And if when you get to the post office, you see there's a lot of people there, why don't you go around the block once and come back later? But wearing your mask to keep your droplets off of everybody else, not to stop their their droplets or their aerosol is still coming at you. So you still want to be in pretty wide open spaces, but we have lots of those in Beldy. So we are really lucky. No elevators that you can't get out of your apartment without being too close to people. It really is nice.
Yeah, definitely. The elevators are not probably a great place to be right
now. Yeah, New York
City. Didn't think about that.
New York City, you can't get 6 feet from everybody. It's really hard. So we are really lucky here.
Yeah. Now, have you had a chance to watch Dr. Zinc at the state press conferences? And I
get a printed message from her every day, but I don't do media to watch her.
Yeah. Are the statewide updates, though, they seem to be, and they've just added, which I think is great, like recovered cases to their data set. So you can go check out all the different data. And we've had it sounds fairly ominous, but I think close to 100 people have recovered. So that's a nice thing for me to be able to say. Are you getting the information you need from the state level?
Oh, I think we are. Yeah. I think Valdez was actually a little bit ahead of the state in a lot of things, but I think our state is quite ahead of some other states. You know, New York City was saying that, you know, just keep living your life, we'll be fine, and just don't get on crowded subways. How you were supposed to avoid that in New York City, I don't know. But Alaska never said that, and Valdez even more so said, no, we gotta be proactive, and I think the proactivity has been really good.
So is a first case inevitable, and then when that comes, if it comes, what is the protocol and what, you know, how do things change?
It all has to do with probabilities. That is, right at the moment, if you've been in Valdez for the last month and I've been in Valdez for the last month and none of us have been out of town, we could probably get along fine without any masks or whatever. But the first person who comes that is maybe asymptomatic, maybe they're 2 days before they're going to get the cough, maybe they're going to be one of these asymptomatic carriers, and you meet them, and they came down to work for Alyeska, or they came down with a fishery, or they came down with sport fishing, or, you know, they're a trucker or whatever. And then they infect somebody in town who then goes to the grocery store and other people don't, and they don't have a mask on, and they give it to the cashier. You know, it could go really fast, or it could go 6 cases at a time, which would be almost perfect. You know, like, okay, can I have my turn this week because you guys aren't busy? You know, that would be wonderful. We're not going to get to do that, unfortunately. And so we need to make sure that our surge isn't so much that there aren't enough medevac planes or there isn't enough oxygen.
Now, how do we get over this? Is it going to be so many people get it and recover? Is it going to be, you know, if you hide away for so long and then you come out,
Out of your house,
are we just kicking the can down the road? What? How do you see this ending? Is the answer testing? I guess this is, no one really knows.
Nobody knows. And, or they know, but it's out there a ways. So there could be a great vaccine, and there's estimates any place between 6 to 9 months down to a year and a half. So if there's a great vaccine, that's what we're waiting for. If everybody in the entire world all hunkered down and didn't see anybody else for 2 weeks, then the virus would go, there's no people, what do I do? And it would die out. That's not gonna happen, unfortunately. And so even if the United States all did that and closed all its borders, then somebody's gonna be left in, you know, Ethiopia, who comes in later on because they've been out in the desert and didn't even know this was happening. And then here we go again. I don't think that's going to happen. It could also happen that everybody who could get the virus gets the virus. That's kind of what happened in China. Like, it's kind of burned out in that province because there's nobody else left to get it. They also could come up with some great cure, you know, like, which they do not have yet. All these things that people are trying out, you know, Plaquenil and hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine and this, that, and the other thing. None of those are the cure, none of them. And but they may come up with something like that. So that's kind of what we're waiting for. But the other thing we're trying to do is flatten the curve a lot. So for instance, if somebody brings it from Seattle on their fishing boat, we're going to try to make sure it's only their fishing boat that gets it and not everybody in town all at once.
We're talking with Kathy Todd, doctor at the Valdez Medical Clinic and Providence Hospital, emergency doc, regular doctor, I guess, over there as well. You and Dr. Cullen spoke the other night during the Valdez City Council meeting, and there are some plans in place for to kind of open up Valdez or for essential workers. Think about the ramifications of all of this. It gets daunting because if people don't fish here, that's kind of a huge major food supply. You know, if you think we just think, you know, how it affects us here, but that's kind of a big deal. A lot of things are a big deal. The oil industry to keep flowing and some of those things require people coming in and out. And to that end, the Alaska Seafood Processing Association put together a plan, and that's the agency that Peter Pan is a part of, who has a processing plant here in Valdez. They had an open letter to the community with that plan that's been given to the state. And there's a little confusion over who's exactly looking at that plan and the process to get that approved. And I know the thought was that there was input from the healthcare community. And we found out during the council meeting
that there was not from the local community.
From the
local,
and for sure, at least the local doctors haven't.
Yeah. So Dr. Cullen was involved in that all yesterday morning. So yes, Dr. Cullen's now in that mix. All those processing plants had to put something into the state in a very short period of time. And some of those were not very viable plans. And then things change. But I'll say that they talk about the surge and can you take care of the surge? Our July, August surge here between the tourists and especially the fish processors.
It stretches you in a normal year.
And so if we had that, you know, depending on how many fish there are and so how many processors they have and how they deal with their own people, we're stretched to the limit in a regular July and August. Now, we probably won't have as many tourists, but and they're elderly, and so they take more care per person. But it's dangerous fishing, and it's dangerous working at a fish processing plant. And they work 16-hour days when there aren't enough of them. Either we get a whole bunch of people or we get too few people, and they all work so long. And then in your other 8 hours, you're supposed to eat, sleep, go to the bathroom, and do your laundry. And so they're all crammed in together in bunkhouses, and they all cram together eating in cafeterias where they're really close together. And we're always seeing, you know, diseases that they bring from all over the world, or from all over the lower 48, that's plenty, and they exchange them. And they are underslept and overworked, and some of them are not in the greatest of shape to begin with, depending on who they tap into if they're their workers for that year. And it's hard. And so if they just add that on top of us, and we're already strapped because we're in the middle of our surge for COVID, or even a little surge for COVID, and that's going to be hard. And if they come in with the disease, their idea was that they'll bring them in and make them not interact with the community. Safeway was just saying yesterday that they had a way to supply the fleet, the fishing boats, with supplies without.
And incidentally, I think they're also anyone who is sheltering at home. They're often trying to figure out how to deliver. So,
anyway, kudos there. Yeah. They said yesterday that they were actually doing a thing. So no, fishing captains, don't go look for your food. We will, you tell us what we want and we'll bring it to you. Don't come in our store. So people are thinking of that. But if they get COVID in the bunkhouse or on fishing boats, we will have to take care of those people. You can't just say, oh, sorry, you die. You can't. So even if they bring in, bring in extra medical personnel to take care of their usual surge, all the little injuries, all the, the workers' comp kind of stuff and their, various sniffles and whatever, they still will, we'll still be helping with the wait till the medevac comes. And will that be too much? And we may still be sitting here pretty and twiddling our thumbs, holding our breath otherwise, and we could take care of it. And maybe we'll be in the middle of a surge and we can't. And that's, I've heard it said that that's what's difficult about this particular emergency, because usually you can say, I'm under stress, and I'm under stress until I finish planning this wedding and getting it over with. I'm under stress until this divorce goes through or until I've finished buying this house. And you can see light at the end of the tunnel. And this one, like, how long? And even if you're just holding your breath and it really isn't that bad, how long can you hold your breath? And it's very, very difficult.
Yeah, and everyone's just trying to do their jobs or doing the best that they can do, and you know, everyone's under additional stress, homeschooling, or all the different pressures people have. So I did speak with Colby Bolton, who's one of the managers at Peter Pan Seafoods, and it does sound like they're trying to work with, they want the advice of local communities. So is
Silver Bay the same? Yeah.
Yeah. Did Dr. Cullen feel like, I mean, I don't want you to put words in his mouth, but I would imagine that was a good experience to have some input and.
Yeah, I think everybody's trying to make the best of a bad situation in all the things, you know, in school and work and whatever. And I think that there's all kinds of opinions on what should be done, like, you know, on everything. You know, should we send the kids to school, let the chips fall where they may for COVID because school's important, all the way through to don't do anything with the kids. It's better that they lose a year of education than that any of them get sick. And then there's everything in between, depending on your values and how well you think that homeschool is working. Well, the same thing here. You know, is it important to get your blood pressure checked? Well, some people, it probably is. I saw somebody over the phone yesterday that was 210 on their blood pressure. They really need to deal with that. They can't just put that off. But the person who's 140, is it really worth it? There's all kinds of values that are there.
And to that end, there's all kinds of judgments out in the community.
Exactly.
So that brings us to maybe our last topic, and that's mental health. So how is this affecting, because you have to treat the whole person. So,
well, and you have to treat the whole community. I'll give example of my parents who are in a thing like the long-term care. So let's pretend that this is the long-term care in Valdez. They're in Oregon, but the long-term care is closed down to visitors. And for many people in there, that is like, why would you want to live out the rest of your life without seeing your family? Like, never mind. I'd rather take my chances of dying. But it's not just you. It's the person in the next bed, too. And so it's the same in the community. That is, you might say, gosh, getting my job back in some non-essential industry is the most important thing, and let the chips fall for it where they may, because, you know, getting my rent paid is just as important to my well-being. And you have a very good point. But the person you infect may be somebody who dies prematurely of that. And it may not even be the person that you saw. It could be the person that they then went and saw. And so you're making decisions for your neighbors as well. And
sometimes there isn't an exact answer.
There isn't
That's
an exact
kind of the
answer.
Answer to a lot of these things, I
and
think,
it also
right?
changes. As we know more science, we change our minds. As we know, as things change about how many cases there are, you change your mind. Things get done differently in Seattle than they do here right at the moment.
And it is
for
hard.
A reason.
You're a doctor and you're serving in the best interest of Valdez, but you're also a business owner. So you understand the pressures of people need to walk through the door and pay your bill, or you can't pay your rent and your employee. So it is, it's a conundrum. It's a hard thing to do, but we appreciate your efforts in getting prepared for our community and then coming on. And I'm hoping we can have maybe you back again, or Dr. Cullen, you mentioned, might be available to do kind of a weekly update. And then maybe at such point, if we do have a case, getting an update. Because I think that's what Valdez is very anxious about, when, you know, what happens when it is here, and how, you know, then you say the probabilities change. So, you know, maybe getting an update on what are. Yeah, great. Okay, well, thank you so much for your time and all this great information.
Thank you.